The Boers monitored the train's approach. As Churchill continued to watch, three large field guns appeared on the hilltop. The clatter of gunfire joined the rattling of the train and the barking of orders among the soldiers. Bullets clanged against the armour and hammered the carriages from end to end. From the top of the hill came the roar of artillery. An explosion buffeted the back of the train, sending white smoke and flame skyward. From a distance of no more than 600 yards, the Boers had let loose with two artillery pieces and a Maxim gun. Boer riflemen quickly joined the action and fired with abandon. Churchill, having seen enough to fully appreciate the situation, dropped to the floor of his carriage and hoped for the best. Rounds continued hammering the side of the train as the driver increased speed to escape the maelstrom. Explosions and the crash of guns drowned out all other noise. Churchill felt the train lurch forward and round a bend before hurtling down a steep hill at the bottom of which the Boers had laid a large stone across the tracks. The collision was violent. The first carriage slammed into the obstruction and went airborne, landing upside down on the embankment alongside the tracks. The second carriage, an armoured car occupied by members of the Durban Light Infantry, flipped on its side and slid 20 yards along the line in a blaze of sparks, leaving in its wake a grisly trail of broken and bloody men. The third car spun on its axis and came to a grinding halt, half on the tracks and half off. Churchill's carriage remained upright but came to a sudden halt that threw its occupants to the floor with a bone-jarring thud. Aside from his rattled nerves and a few bruises, Churchill escaped major injury. The Boers continued blasting away at the wreckage. The sailors managed to fire 3 rounds from the train's paltry naval gun before an enemy shell to the barrel rendered it junk. Although protected in his carriage from rifle fire, Churchill feared one well-placed artillery round would blow him and everyone else to smithereens. Believing his chances would be better outside and curious to see the extent of the carnage, Churchill pulled himself up and climbed over the carriage's iron siding. He lowered himself to the ground among a hail of gunfire and ran toward the engine to inspect the damage. An artillery shell exploded overhead, sending hot shrapnel in all directions but missing Churchill. The train's driver, Charles Wagner, emerged from the wreckage, his head lacerated by a shell fragment and his face covered in blood. "I'm a civilian," he roared in protest. "What do you think they're paying me for? To be killed by bombshells? Not me." Churchill urged the man to pull himself together and talked him into getting back behind the controls. Churchill thrived in these desperate conditions. The engine and 2 cars still remained upright on the tracks. Clearing the derailed carriages from the line was vital if they hoped to escape. Churchill conferred with Haldane and hatched a strategy. Haldane and a number of riflemen would lay down covering fire against the Boers' hilltop position. Churchill would oversee the effort to clear the line, which involved using the engine, operated by the wounded Wagner, to push the mangled mess free of the tracks. "The working of the engine itself was a difficult matter," notes a Home Office report on the incident, "because at each collision with the wreckage at which it was butting, it might have easily been derailed. The danger was exceptional. The heavy fire of shells and bullets inflicted many casualties, and more than a quarter of all the men in the train were killed or wounded." As Wagner repeatedly backed the engine into the wreckage, a shell hit the front of the engine and set it on fire. Throughout the 50-minute ordeal, Churchill stomped back and forth, barking orders, directing Wagner's efforts, and rallying the men. While many sought cover from the relentless enemy fire, Churchill appeared oblivious to it all. He seemed to have a total disregard for his own safety. "Nothing was so thrilling as this," he reported for the Morning Post, "to wait and struggle among these clanging, rending iron boxes, with the repeated explosions of the shells and the artillery, the noise of the projectiles striking the cars, the hiss as they passed in the air, the grunting and puffing of the engine, poor, tortured thing, hammered by at least 12 shells, any of which, by penetrating the boiler, might have made an end of it all. The expectation of destruction as a matter of course, the realization of powerlessness and the alternatives of hope and despair." This was not hyperbole. As one private in the Durban Light Infantry noted in a letter home, "Churchill is a splendid fellow. He walked about in it all as coolly as if nothing was going on, and called for volunteers to give him a hand to get the truck out of the road. His presence and way of going on were as much good as 50 men would have been." Haldane, in a subsequent report, also vouched for Churchill's bravery. I would point out that while engaged on the work of saving the engine, for which he was mainly responsible, Churchill was frequently exposed to the full fire of the enemy. I cannot speak too highly of his gallant conduct. As Churchill and others struggled with the wreckage, Haldane and his riflemen fought a desperate action to keep away the Boers advancing up the tracks, until, with a loud grinding noise, the engine pushed the derailed truck from the line. The plan now called for linking the rear cab and gun carriage to the engine and hauling away as many men as possible. But an enemy round destroyed the couplings. Churchill and others attempted to push the trucks forward, but abandoned the effort under severe fire. Haldane ordered his men to load as many wounded as they could onto the engine. Men still capable of standing were placed in the cab. Others were laid gently in the tender atop the coal, while some clung for dear life to the engine's cowcatcher. Through it all, enemy fire proved relentless. The plan called for getting the wounded to some houses near Frere Station, roughly 800 yards away, and to try to hold out there while the engine went for assistance. The Boers concentrated all their fire on the beleaguered engine. One round slammed into a metal plate inches from Churchill's face. Another shattered the arm of a nearby soldier, leaving his hand dangling by a few strips of flesh. Infantrymen not injured followed on foot, using the engine as cover. The Boers doubled their efforts and battered the engine and tracks with everything they had. It proved too much for some. Much to Haldane's dismay, he saw two men waving white handkerchiefs. Enraged at this disobedience to his direct orders, Haldane ran in their direction and yelled at them to keep fighting. It was too late. Several Boers on the hill, noticing the surrender, mounted their horses and galloped down the slope to round up their catch. They reached the men before Haldane and encircled them on horseback with their rifles at the ready. The men, temporarily torn between Haldane's furious orders and the muzzles of the enemy guns, threw their hands above their heads and marched off into captivity. Churchill leapt from the engine as it drew closer to the houses near Frere Station. "I can't leave those poor buggers to their fate," he told Wagner before departing. He at once found himself alone in a shallow ditch which ran alongside the tracks, and saw two figures in flapping coats and wide-brimmed hats on horseback about 100 yards down the line. He turned and ran as the Boers squeezed off two rounds. His lungs burning, he pressed himself against the side of the embankment. One Boer quickly dismounted and dropped to his knees for better aim. Churchill scrambled up the embankment, flinching as two more shots kicked up dirt on either side of him. He rolled into a shallow ditch and caught the attention of another nearby horseman, who, yelling in a language which Churchill didn't understand, galloped to within 40 yards. With blood on his mind, Churchill reached for his Mauser pistol, only to discover he had left it in the engine. He cursed and briefly contemplated running. He saw a hut for railway workers about 50 yards away, and 150 yards beyond that flowed the Blue Krantz River, which might afford some cover if he could reach its rocky banks. The distance, however, between him and the horseman, rifle drawn, aim steady, did not bode well. Giving up was a foreign concept to Churchill, but at that moment he recalled the words of Napoleon. "When one is alone and unarmed, a surrender may be pardoned." Churchill raised his arms. The Boer lowered his rifle and urged him to approach. Before marching off with his prisoner, the horseman fired several futile shots at the escaping engine. It began to rain as Churchill walked silently alongside the Boer's horse. With nothing to do but think, two discomforting thoughts sprang to mind. The first was the letter penned 5 days earlier to Sir Evelyn Wood, discouraging the exchange of prisoners. The other concerned the 2 10-round clips of Mauser ammunition in the pockets of his khaki coat. How could Churchill claim to be a correspondent and a non-combatant if they found the clips in his possession? He managed to discard one clip in the tall grass without being noticed. He palmed the other and was about to drop it when the guard, speaking perfect English, addressed him in a sharp tone. The horseman marched Churchill back to the scene of the battle, where 56 wounded or slightly wounded men and a number of soldiers too injured to stand were now prisoners. The rain fell in sheets and turned the ground to muck. Some prisoners seemed not to care and sat forlornly on the sodden earth, eating what meagre rations they possessed. The Boers inspected their catch and soon ordered the men to their feet. On the order to march, the tattered-looking procession moved out. Those two wounded to walk were left at the scene to be gathered up later. Churchill turned as they climbed a small hill and saw the engine, smoke bellowing from its funnel in the foul weather, steaming away to Estcourt. Help would soon be at hand for those lucky few who had made it to the houses near Freyr Station. For Churchill, Haldane, and the others, it was too late. Churchill hurried to keep up, but a boer on horseback told him in a friendly tone there was no need to rush. Another offered him a hat to ward off the rain. Although dispirited, Churchill took comfort in this show of humanity.